Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia.
And Beth.
And Beth, this is the second time we're doing an episode this week. How fabulous.
I know, right? Because we didn't do any episode last week. We kind of procrastinated and here we are doing an interview this week.
We're back on schedule, baby.
Yes.
And I like the interview ones because we don't have to do as much research. We let someone else do all the research for us.
Yeah. I mean, I like doing the interview ones too, because we learn a lot more stuff and it's just so much more interactive.
Yeah. And sometimes it's fun hearing like another person instead of just me and you all week.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So this week, ladies and gentlemen, we are very excited to have with us Stephen Flaherty of the Seven Hills Ghost Hunting and Paranormal Researchers Group. He is joining us over the Zoom because we are still socially distanced due to Corona. He's here to talk with us. He's been doing this about 25 years, and he's seen all sorts of things. So we are really excited to be able to introduce him to everybody.
Welcome, Stephen.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
All right.
I don't have any complaints.
So we first found you, I should say Beth first found you, when we were doing our episode on haunted prisons around the area. Mm-hmm. And you guys had investigated Rutland Prison. We saw that you work sometimes with a doll, and we were very kind of interested in that idea of using the doll. Beth, you can probably explain a little better. But,
oh, no, I would like Stephen to explain about how he uses that Raggedy Ann doll, because I was blown away in the article when it talked about it. I thought that it was such a great idea.
Well, okay. I want to start first by telling you, I had received the doll and I had a ghost hunt that night, and it was a public one. So here I'm walking across the street and I have a doll in my hand. Now, I'm a 300-pound person and I stand about 6 foot. So here's this 6 foot, 300-pound guy walking across the street, and everybody's looking at the guy with the doll. It's a Raggedy Ann doll, and it's what they call a target instrument, okay? Hopefully it will bring out the kids, and I mean, it's sad to say, but, you know, there are kids that are spirits, mm-hmm. but it seems to bring those out. And they have them of all kinds of things. I got a Raggedy Ann doll, but I've seen them as puppies, and I've seen them as teddy bears, and you know, and I mean, there's just a whole list, but it's a K2 meter. So in the K2 meter is that gray box that everybody carries that supposedly tells you when the spirits come around. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the same thing. Her arms, her belly, and her head will light up a blue light if something comes by and touches it. So, I mean, like
really?
I said, it's it's a pretty neat thing.
Okay. And did you rig that up together with the lights?
No, I bought it off one of the companies.
And it works?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think it works as well as just your regular run-of-the-mill K2, or would you say it works even better?
Well, depending on what you are. I think it catches a lot of the activity of kids, you know, that are just, hey, look, this is neat. I can play with the doll. And, you know, that's what I walk in saying. You can play with the doll, so touch it. And, you know, and a K2 just works on everybody. So, you know, right. Regular K2 thing just works on everybody. This is just a trigger item. It's a thing that will catch the attention of children that are spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's sad to think about that, but it happens, you know.
Mm-hmm. It makes total sense once you stop and actually think about it. Oh, absolutely. Especially kids who would have passed and maybe they had a Raggedy Ann doll themselves.
Yeah, that was a Raggedy Ann doll for a long time. No, like I said, yeah, they're coming up with all kinds of things. Now, see, I've been at hospitals. You know, my sister that works with us once in a while, she's a nurse. So mm-hmm. she'll bring a stethoscope and she'll bring like a syringe or something. And we lay those out because, again, it catches the nurse's attention. If there's something that they go, oh, look, that's something I used to use. And see, now I told her about the doll when I first got it. I brought it across the street. Well, when I set it up later that night, the doll was thrown off the table twice. So what I think was somebody, you know, one of the kids tried to take it. He wanted it on the floor to play with it. He didn't want it in the center of the table. So, I mean, that's kind of what we figured it was for. Was
that's I had never considered that. The idea that there could be just everyday objects here that are just attracting the different spirits' attentions based on what they did in their real lives. It's an incredible thought process that must have brought that forward for people. How did you originally get into paranormal, ghost hunting? Were you like us, like as kids, it was just fascinating? Or
yes, it was just the macabre. I liked the macabre. Mm-hmm. I never had anything happen to me while I was a kid, or I never had any like real spirits ever come bother me or anything. It was just, I liked the horror movies, and I had a friend that was a ghost hunter, and he said, why don't you come with us and I'll show you something neat. And it was, you know, like I said, it caught my attention. Now, it can be the most exciting thing out there that can be. It can also be the most boringest thing you out there, because if you're out in a room by yourself for 3 or 4 hours, trust me, I talk to myself a lot, but I can't do it for 3 hours. And I still, even after all these years, I still find it real, really uncomfortable to walk in an empty room, knowing it's an empty room, and say, hey, is there anybody out here who wants to talk to me? And that's about as crazy as that gets. Okay. Mm-hmm.
It definitely is an awkward thing to do the first few times, whether you're by yourself or if you have an observer like Amelia or something. Yeah. But yeah, I generally like to let her do all the talking because I feel kind of silly doing it. I have to admit. Although I did once ask a ghost if they like the Texas toast. So
yeah, who knows? Yeah. Did you get a response?
I don't think we did. Did we?
We didn't that day. No, no,
no.
We were in a supermarket just having a good time.
Yeah. So you remember the market basket up on the North Shore that was having the ghost spotted in the frozen food aisle?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that was actually our first ghost hunt. That's how ghost hunting in New England was born.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right. Looking for a supermarket ghost. So yeah, we've done some interesting spots ourselves, but.
Now, personally, I'm not like a psychic or medium or anything. I have to use gadgets to do it. But I talk with it. I have a lot of friends that are. And I've asked them a bunch of times, like, where's a good place to go ghost hunting? And they tell you, the supermarket, the mall, because they can walk by and touch it, people, and collect their energy. So they say, you know, there's tons of them there. And it doesn't have to be an old rickety house that you know, because the land itself could always be haunted.
So supermarkets and malls, right? Do you have a particular mall here in Massachusetts that you like to go to?
No, I don't. I stay out of those because I don't want to hassle with the idea of asking people to go hunting. I've got enough people who will call me after this COVID thing to go visit them.
Okay.
You know, and I deal with more of the things that a normal ghost hunter won't deal with. I, you know, like you guys were interested in the SOSM, you know, the Sacred Order of St. Michael's. Okay. And that's what I do. A lot of the people that are ghost hunters that I know, they will call me if they think it's more of a demonic thing than a, you know, because a lot of ghost hunters do not want to deal with that. It's you know,
included. That's absolutely. Yeah. That's Beth and I, it says it on our business cards. We don't do demons, but can you tell our listeners a little bit about what the Sacred Order of St. Michael is and how you got involved?
Somebody had mentioned it to me, is that Archbishop Ron Flay, you know, was taking applications to see. I'm of an Episcopalian Archbishop, let's say. He's opened it up to any kind of Catholic that, you know, just wants to believe in, you know, Jesus Christ and the whole bit. He thinks that Roman Catholics can get really too hardcore, and he's more out to help people than, like I said, always put up with the Vatican and that kind of deal. Mm-hmm. I called him up one time and I talked to him for probably a half hour. And he said, you know, you seem like somebody that's interested. So he said, you know, anything that's in the New England area, he would send me, and I will deal with anything around New England that comes up. I mean, it's not a thing that happens every day, but it, you know, it does come up. And usually he calls me or he sends me the information and, you know, we stop up to see. And a lot of things that people think are not demonic.
So for our listeners who don't know, can you kind of explain what the Sacred Order of St. Michael is?
Ron Play put it together. It's an organization. If you feel you're being tormented by a demon or you're possessed, call up his number and he will send an investigator out to investigate it. And then we have priests that will provide an exorcism or whatever needs to be done. But he's been doing this probably, I want to say, close to 50 years.
Wow.
That is it. Well, he's one of the top people in the country that deals with demonic issues. And he doesn't work directly under the Pope because he prefers to let a lot of other Catholics in. Like I said, it doesn't have to be a Roman Catholic to be part of this. Yeah, so like I said, you just call him up. Everything's free. Something in like New England happens. Call him and he'll call me and, you know, I'll take a trip out. I'll set something up with you. And I'll come out and we'll do an investigation to see what's happening. And, you know, and any evidence I get from him, I got to take back to him. And then they will decide whether anything needs to be pursued after that.
Okay.
So what would be something someone might be experiencing that you would need to come and investigate for a possible exorcism?
Do you ever see the movie The Exorcism?
Oh, the absolutely. Exorcism?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's not that far off.
Oh.
I mean, your head doesn't turn around, but I mean, she played an excellent part in that of actually what an exorcism or a possessed person can be. You talk in languages, you have strengths that, you know, I mean, and a lot of this can fit under, you know, like a person that has mental illness too.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's another thing that we would have to do before an exorcism happens. You have to see a doctor, a physical doctor, and he has to okay you. You have to see a psychiatrist, and they have to okay you that you're not crazy. Then after all that kind of stuff happens, then there are certain things that I have to get for the church of proof that you can talk in tongues, you can move something. An exorcism is usually never done in somebody's house because you don't want to bring the fight to their house. So it would normally be done inside the church somewhere. And when it happens, you're given a bed, you're given a little table, and you have the stuff the priest brings with him. And that's it. Because again, you don't want things flying around and hitting you. And if it's a woman, you would have probably four or five other women with you that could hold her down and deal with her from getting up out of the bed and that kind of stuff. If it's a guy, it's the same thing. You have four or five guys just hanging around to keep, you know. But an exorcism would be performed. And it's really, you really should never talk to a demon, okay? You shouldn't be asking them questions like you're ghost hunting. Okay, you should leave it up to the priest. And really all the priest does is he goes in and he has his ritual of prayers that he goes over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's holy water and the crucifix. And
okay. And so after somebody has been through an exorcism, you been there to, I assume you've been there to witness a great number of them, yes?
Yes, I have. I have been in the background. I'm the one that runs the camera type deal. I'm not involved with anything that deals with the actual event because, like I said, it's a very deep ritual thing.
Yep. So after the completion of the ritual, right, I'm sure that there are sometimes the ritual works and sometimes it doesn't work. How would you kind of tell at the end? Like, is it like an immediate sort of the person's like, oh my goodness, I am like all better and I feel all myself again, or is it something different?
Usually it's something that the house when you go in and, you know, the part of the church where you go in, she's very, she or he is very, you could almost feel energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's just a big amount of dread to the room. Usually if something has worked, that kind of seems to lift. Supposedly, Mother Mary will come by and leave rose petals. You know, supposedly she will walk by and you'll smell the vapor of roses. And that's supposed to tell you that she's come by and she's you know, helped her part out. Doesn't that always work? No, you can get all that kind of stuff and you can all go home and thinking it worked in the whole bit. And a couple of days later, you're back there again, starting the whole thing over again.
Okay.
And exorcism can last up to a 20-minute session of prayers to months and months and months of doing this over and over and over again. Wow. I mean, nothing. Wow. And well, it takes you, if you called me up and said, you know, you think, you know, your brother is possessed, it would probably take close to 2 years from the time I get there and I started investigating to the idea that the Vatican would actually okay it. Because like I said, you got to go see a doctor and you've got to have, you know, all this stuff that has to happen.
Yep.
The church doesn't just walk in there and say, okay, I'm here to help. You know, the church wants you to do exactly what they ask you to do. Because like I said, things can go wrong. And if things go wrong, it can be really tragic.
Right.
Not good. It's never happened to me. But also I want to say in the 25 years or so, I brought 3 things back to the church that I couldn't feel I could deal with. Okay. So, I mean, it's not like something that shows up all the time. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's few and far between on at least my part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can do what they call a deliverance prayer. And that's actually in the Bible. Jesus gives everybody the right to perform an exorcism, to rule out the devil or the bad. It's really just a set of prayers that you say, and that's all a deliverance prayer is, but it is an exorcism.
Okay.
Okay. Now, do you guys know when you're baptized, the prayer that is said over you at the baptismal is an exorcist prayer? You're being exorcised as they baptize you?
Interested. No, I did not know that.
You guys didn't know that?
No.
You're born into sin. Mm-hmm. Okay. And for the church to feel that you are cleansed and all set, they actually perform an exorcism prayer over you when you're baptized.
Okay. So interestingly enough, so neither Amelia nor I are Catholics. We actually were raised in a Baptist tradition. And with Baptists, it's a baptism by choice once you become of age. So I almost feel like that would make more sense when you're dealing with teenagers, that there are probably a lot more potential issues with a teenager as opposed to somebody who's, you know, an infant.
Okay, but now also you have to take it. It's everything doesn't have to revolve around the church for this. Okay, it really doesn't matter what you are, whether you're Jewish or all the way up to, you know, Rome. There are certain things that have to happen, though. Okay, you can't be walked in the house one day and all of a sudden feel that you're possessed. It doesn't happen that way. It's not all of a sudden the devil says, I want you, and I'm going to possess you. Mm-hmm. You have to ask or invite this thing in, okay? You've got to be more or less really down on the dumps, a junkie, you know, somebody that is just really down and will ask anything for help. And he's sitting there or she's sitting there one day all depressed. And it's like, you know, anybody, anything that can help me, please help me. And of course, if the devil sees it, I'll go see her. Or I'll go see him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it starts. Or, you know, the Annabelle doll. Has anybody heard of the Annabelle doll?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The Lorraine and Edward Warren doll. The girls that had that doll were the reason it got possessed. They were nursing students. And what had happened was it was given to one of the kids because they were staying in the dorms. So the mother got the doll at a yard sale. They started to notice the thing would move around. Now, that doesn't mean that the spirit is inside the doll yet. It just means he's in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had heard about a little girl a bunch of years before had passed away in a car accident in front, and her name was Annabelle. Well, when this stuff started to happen around the house, they started to really pay attention. They'd put the doll a certain way on the bed and go off to school and come back, and it's been moved. Well, of course, they think it's the kids in the house. I mean, you know, it's a college dorm. I mean, they're playing around. Well, they used to tape the door and the whole bit to make sure, you know, that people weren't coming in and out. And finally, one of the boyfriends actually got to the point. He knew there was something wrong with the doll. And he turned around, woke up one night. He doesn't know if he really dreamt this or if this happened. but the doll was up at his throat, choking. Okay.
That's horrifying.
Okay, well, I left out a part I forgot. So when the doll started to move around, they hired a medium to come in and find out what. And, of course, that's when the medium had told them, it's the spirit of the little girl outside. She wants permission to move into the doll. Well, they're nursing students. You know, they're caring and loving and the whole bit. And they figured it'd be, you know, like a mascot type deal. So yeah, they said, sure, why not? Well, okay, that was the big mistake they made. Just now they told the demon, and they think it's a little girl, that they can move into the doll. So that's why it moves into the doll. So after this, they called up Lorraine Warren after the kid getting choked and stuff. They called up the next day. He had big scratches along his chest. And of course, if it's a demonic thing, they normally come in three, the scratches, because they'll be, you know, it's a ward against the trilogy, mm-hmm. the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. A demon has never been human. It's never been alive like you and I feel. Mm-hmm. Usually a demon is a fallen angel. All right, I'm getting off track. So that's how the doll gets, you know, got the name Annabelle, and that's how the Warrens got it. They were called out. They called some priests, and they had the place exercised and the whole bit. And Lorraine and Ed took the doll home. Now, on the way home, they said the car was all over the road, and he always buys a nice car, okay? But I guess he stopped, he got out, and he blessed it with holy water. And after that, the car was fine. They got it home, and they put it. Here's something I guess you don't know about the doll. Did you know the doll came with a black cat?
I've never heard that. No.
Okay. When Ed and Lorraine Warren put it on a chair beside his desk. And every once in a while, you say he'd turn his head, and here's this black cat that just appears in front of the doll. And he'd walk around Ed's office, and he'd take real notice of the books he's reading, mm-hmm. because usually Ed's into every macabre thing there was. And he'd stop, and then he'd walk back in front of Annabelle, and he'd just disappear.
Wow.
And a lot of people don't know that part about it. You know, the cat did come along with them. You ever go into Lorraine and Ed's museum, their basement?
We haven't had a chance to go.
No, they passed away now. And
right.
I don't know what's happening to the museum, because when I knew Lorraine said everything was going to be shipped to England and put into another museum. With his son-in-law, I don't know what they're really deciding on doing. But that was an interesting place to be. I told Lorraine. Lorraine said she would never spend at 9 o'clock in the basement. She wouldn't be in there, not for anything. I told her I'd go down and sleep the night in there anytime she wanted me to. And she'd never let me.
So how did you meet the Warrens?
They've always offered learning sessions, and, you know, they started to teach as soon as they became really popular. And like, again, it's like, you know, I just knew people that were saying, hey, you know, you should join this. And it's like, you've never met any nicer people in the world. Okay. You really haven't. Lorraine's the sweetest woman I've ever met besides my girlfriend. You know,
nice save.
But no, I mean, like I said, she's just a very holy, loving person. And, you know, they'll drop everything. They can have a dinner for Thanksgiving, all set to go and the whole bit, and they'll run out the door to go help somebody. I mean, that's how much they were out to really help people. It wasn't the idea of a ghost hunt or anything. It was to help. And like I said, that's what I kind of hope I take after a little bit, is I'm out to help the people I can. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've done the ghost hunts. I've seen that kind of stuff. Okay, good and dandy. And okay, but now it's to help the people. I mean, I walked into one, and they were some Indian people, and most of them didn't speak English. Okay, but the daughter had called and asked us to come out, so we came out. It was me and a buddy. I took pictures, and you see these little orbs around her. My friend did. We have a little ritual we do with sage and, you know, oils and stuff. So he burns this stuff over, and I turn around and I take pictures afterwards. Now the orbs are all gone. There's nothing there. After we get outside, you know, because I take everything home first, go over the evidence, and I go back to explain to people what I found.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm in the driveway and I'm showing, you know, my buddy. I said, look at this one. You know, this one has all the orbs around her. And I said, this is when you're all done and there's not a single thing in the picture. The husband really wasn't happy we were there, but he loved her enough that he said, okay, I'll put up with this. Okay, when I went back to go over the evidence, that guy could not have been nicer to me. He was telling us how it worked and his wife is happy and that, you know, this worked out really great for them. And, you know, and they're trying to give us money and we don't take money. And it's like, no, no, no. And it's like, but they turned around and the whole family just changed their attitude towards it because she felt so good and she slept through the night. And this was a woman that was being pulled out of bed. She would be pulled out of bed in the middle of the night and that kind of stuff. And
So they were very appreciative of you coming over.
They were very happy that we came in. And like I said, when you kind of shown up, you kind of thought it was something a little bit different that they weren't happy with us.
So as you talk about like Annabelle and the Warrens and all this different haunted stuff, do you, and I was just thinking more about like their basement, what kind of like haunted objects have you found? Like, is it just people who can be possessed? Can objects be possessed? Do you guys ever exercise homes?
On my desk, I actually have a bunch of the things that I've taken away from people. And a lot of them are like the Ouija boards. And there's some other different boards that, you know, people buy. And, you know, but there's a lot of dolls that I've gotten and things like that. That anything really, I think, can be possessed. Not possessed, maybe, but it has an attachment to it. It has a spirit that follows it around. Pictures and pianos and, you know, and anything. I mean, they seem to talk about anything.
That makes
sense.
And
like I said, the more you talk to people, they'll turn around and say, oh, yeah, well, you know, I found this little charm that, you know, under the bureau behind the desk and in this crack. And as soon as I took it out of the room, they never had a problem again. And it's just whoever it belonged to wasn't leaving it there and they wanted somebody to find it. And that's, of course, you must have seen the Haunted Collector, you know, the TV show, The Haunted Collector. Mm-hmm. That's actually Ed Warren's nephew. I always say Frank Zappa. It's not. John Zappas is the Haunted Collector, and that's Ed's nephew.
Cool. So you had mentioned in one of your emails to us, we found you through researching the Rutland prison camp, and you had mentioned that there is some activity out there that you've been called into work around. And can you tell us a little bit about what's going on out there?
I teach a class, you know, it's like kind of a nightlife class type deal. It's, you know, I go in kind of a question and answer period, and then I take them on a little ghost hunt. So I take them up to the Rutland prison camps because the root cell is real, really nice. If it's raining out, you can go in there. If it's a nice day, then you can walk. But there always seems to be some activity there. Okay. Have you guys been there? Have you guys been to the Rutland prison camps? Have you seen the pictures of the place?
Mm-hmm.
There's a quarantine box building. Behind that, there's a tunnel, and kids have been doing black magic and Satan rituals there, and they have brought up a black shadow that I see pretty much every time I come up.
Wow.
And it's just I've tried to get rid of him and tried to get rid of him, and he just doesn't seem to want to go. You know, I probably can have gotten rid of him, but then kids come up the following Friday and do their rituals again, and, you know, he's back. So, I mean, it's just not a place that I would send people to hassle.
Okay.
Have you talked to him?
So, have I talked to him? No, he's a demonic. So it's like, I try to stay my distance, but there's, again, it's like a deliverance prayer. There's a lot of prayers that you can be saying. He has, I would say his base or his home is the tunnel that's right there. So I sit on the edge of the tunnel and I repeat the prayers over and over again. And, you know, usually when I go, you can kind of feel that it's an easier place around. But again, I just don't know if, you know, he's moved on. He probably likes it there. He has people that will give him attention.
Mm-hmm.
But now, it was a prison for a very short time. Did you guys know that? It was a very short prison. Then it turned into a TB hospital. And the reason you had guys like rapists and murderers up there was because it was a TB hospital. If you got sick in prison in Massachusetts, that's where they sent you. Mm-hmm. The warden was a doctor, and he was the nicest guy they say you could ever meet. He treated these guys like human beings. It was never, you got dressed, you got out, and you worked in the farm. Hey, if you're going to run away, great, run away. At the time, there was nothing for 25 miles in any direction, okay? You weren't going to go too far. The hospital actually took care of itself with food and growing, and you were teaching these guys something that they could live off of when they got out. Again, going back to the warden, he treated everybody the same. There was never anything that you were really punished severely for. Even if you were sick, he wanted you to get up, and if you could only work an hour in the fields, mm-hmm. go out and work the hour. Okay, then if you come back to bed and you have to stay in bed, okay, that's fine and dandy, but you put an effort into it, and it showed you. And that was one of the first hospitals where they actually sent people back either to prison or out home that were cured or better from TB. Yeah, it was. It was. That has a lot of history. And I don't know if they have a picture of it, but they have the Boy Scouts made a plaque. You know, not made it, but they did a can drive, and they made enough money to make a plaque for the people that died up there. And there's a little cemetery, and they have the plaque signed up there, and it was for the people from the hospital, which I thought was really nice.
The Boy Scouts, they do some really good projects sometimes. To honor, you know, groups of people who would have otherwise been forgotten about. So that's really great. Yeah.
So what has been your craziest paranormal experience, would you say?
Well, one thing is, I want to tell you, I want to go someplace that I will tell you I'll never go back again to.
Okay.
Not good, I haven't found that yet. But that's actually kind of my goal, that I go leave that place and just say, I'll never go back to there again. No, thrown down a flight of stairs. I've been pushed. I've been scratched. I mean, different things happen. A lot of the times, I guess I'm still not to the point that I think everything is paranormal, because it's not. So if the thing falls down in the other room, well, if I'm not there to see it, okay, it fell down. Okay, things fall down all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I work for a dorm. Trust me, I walk in on after a thirsty Thursday night, and it's, you know, the place is trashed. Do I think that's paranormal? No, I think it's kids that have too much time on their hands and too much alcohol to play with. Mm-hmm. If something happens, unless I'm right there in front of it and I see it, I still wonder if that was something paranormal or if it was just, it's time to fall or move or whatever. I caught on camera and stuff, like a pen that will move across the floor. Or like I said, the one that felt the doll's been thrown off the table mm-hmm. a bunch of times. You know, I mean, I think those are real, really neat, but they're nothing that's overly scary to me. It's like, okay, you know, I have a shadow that follows me. Like when I go to work, he's always standing up at the corner by the stop sign, and he just stands there.
Really?
He's probably been there for about 3 years or something. I picked him up somewhere, and it's just, he just doesn't want to leave, but he can't come into my house.
Okay.
I've had my house blessed and cleansed and the whole bit, and, you know, that keeps the spirits out.
All right. So he just waits on the corner for you to go to work in the morning? And
Yeah, and he's at work a lot now. I guess he's getting a little more gutsier because, you know, I'll open up a closet door or something, and all of a sudden I'll see him there for a second. And, you know, it's just that step back going, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe things like that happen. And it's like you said, he probably just has no time on his hands. And it's like,
yeah.
I mean, I've never had anything amazing. Like Lorraine would talk that they did one house one time, and all of a sudden the guy went up into the freezer upstairs in the attic, and his blacksmith angle thing, the thing that he bangs on, that was upstairs in the freezer. All the food was taken out of the freezer, and this was put into the, and how they ever got it up there, they have no idea. Now that would be something that would be absolutely amazing. But then again, in my mind too, I could think, well, there's four kids and there's this. And they all want to, you know. But, you know, these kids are scared. I mean, you know they didn't do it. But in my mind, it's just, well, you got to always think that this is what could be happening. A lot of people that will call you up to do work, you know, to come out and help them, they really just want somebody to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
They want somebody to believe in what they're saying. They really don't care if you do a ghost hunt at their house, and they don't really care if the spirit stays there. They just want the idea of telling somebody that says, yeah, okay, I've seen that happen, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
wow, that must have been scary, and that you believe them and not you think they're crazy.
Right. They just want their experience validated by someone else.
Yeah.
Yep.
They don't want to go to work and tell their friends, and their friends are all laughing at them. It's like, you know.
It's true. We do a feature on this show. We call it drive-by ghostings for those people, right, who don't have anybody else that they can tell their ghost story to. So we have them send them to us, and we tell their stories.
I mean, that's just it. Like you said, they just want somebody that says, okay, yes, I've heard that happen before. Because when you say that, you've heard that before. And I said, well, you know, something along that line, you know, that this happened or that happened. They just want to know. So, you know, I'm not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But you take the good with the bad. You know, of course, you know, you get a lot of kids that'll call you up on a Friday night. Oh, man, you know, I got ghosts that are flying around my house. And I get... Okay, get off of those kind of drugs and don't use them anymore and you'll be okay. Okay, you know, it's just some of the things you hear are just funny.
Yep.
You know, like, my grandma's just floating all around the living room and all that. Yeah, where do you live? I'll come check that out. And, well, I don't want to tell you where I live. Okay, well, then I can't do anything to help you either. Okay?
Right, why did you call me? Just wanted to talk about it? Sure, let's just talk.
Just want to see if you'd invite yourself over. Like I say, I'm not out to change anybody's mind. Lorraine Warren always said, you may not believe until you haunt it yourself. You don't want to know a ghost hunter until you need one. And then when you need one, you want to know one.
Mm-hmm.
She also said there's no such thing as an atheist in a haunted house.
Definitely not. They don't exist in foxholes or haunted houses.
No, that's what I'm saying. That changes real quick.
Right. You know, or jumping out of planes, right, Amelia?
Mm-hmm.
I have a funny story. I have one guy, he turned around and he bought a picture, and they told him the picture was haunted. And he's like, oh, yeah, okay. That must be pretty cool. So he brings it home, he puts it in his living room. And every once in a while, the TV goes on and off. And every once in a while, he hears something creaking and all. But so he's thinking this is real, really cool. So he decides he's going to go out and buy another one, buy something else that's haunted. And I don't remember what it was. It was probably a bowl of something he put on the counter. So he brings this thing in. Well, guess what? The two of them don't get along. He turns on the TV. She turns it off. He moves this. He puts it back. You know, and it just, he said, you got to come over and get these things out of my house. I said, I can't come over and get them out of your house. You've invited them in here.
Right.
Those pictures would have been there, and the other one would have been there, and they would have never met. This is your problem now. Now you have to try to figure out what to do with it. But yeah, I mean, you never invite things into your house.
That's a really good point right there. How do you usually get phone calls from people? What do they usually want to talk about?
I'll talk to anybody about it that, you know, just to put mind at ease.
Awesome. And I think that's what a lot of people need, too, is just somebody that has a little bit of knowledge about what they're going through and just being able to calm them down a little and say you're not the only person this has ever happened to, and give them some ideas and some strategies to try to flush out whatever that problem is.
And you started off with the idea of, hey, is it hurting you? If if it's hurting you, then I'll come out tonight and I'll check it out.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying it's making noise or this or that, then my next question is can you live with it? Or do you really need it gone? And I mean, most people will say I can live with it if it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
And then I just tell them it's like an apartment now. Okay, you're not in the bathroom with me. You're not in my bedroom. You know, I don't care if you walk the hallways and make a little creaky noise and that kind of stuff. care if you watch TV with me. I don't care if you turn the TV off, on and off once in a while. But I have my spaces and you can have yours. And, you know, if we can get along, great. If not, then we'll try to remove you. Now, when you guys are all done ghost hunting, there's a simple thing you say before you go home. If you just say, thank you for talking to me, it was really nice. And if I have a chance, I'll come back and talk to you again. But you don't follow me home.
Yes, we always make sure to close with something similar to that. Yep.
And if for some reason you feel there's something following you home, stop at a convenience store and just walk up and down the aisles. Because remember, these people lived a long time ago. Mm-hmm. When they can go in and find that there's flour in a bag or candy galore, or trust me, they're more interested in that than going and seeing where you live. And you just walk around and walk out of the store and they stay there usually. I know it sounds crazy, but it's, you know,
so I shouldn't go into a store that I go to often though, because I don't want to run into it there again, right?
I don't think that really matters. I really just think he's more interested in that. And then, you know, he'll probably have found somebody else to follow home. You usually have about 20 spirits around you at any one given time. You have relatives that are just following the bloodline down. Mm-hmm. Because in the old days, the bloodline was really important. And of course, even with women now, because at one time they would have cared less if they had women or girls, because it wasn't anything. They would change their names when they got married and that kind of stuff. But even now with the way things are, I'm sure they're adapting to the idea that the women are family too, and you follow them all the way out. And mm-hmm. you know, but you have a guardian angel, and you have people that just watch over you, and you're never really alone. Trust me.
Well, that is a comforting thought right there, that our people that came before us who love us and are just keeping an eye on us just hang around with us. So
with
any luck, they are also a bit of a paranormal shield from, you know, evil entities that want to do us
harm. They will always be your first defense. And, you know, usually if you hear the things that are falling around and stuff, it's usually because they're having a spat back and forth.
Well, I sure believe in that. Always important to think about all your angels, all your spirits, God or the universe, however you want to put it, and that keeping you safe, especially late at night when you're all alone. Yes, and exactly. I just think that's beautiful, and what a nice note. So Stephen, thank you so much for coming on with us tonight and being here and teaching us so much about all this cool stuff. I'm so happy we were able to get in touch with you.
Me too, yeah.
Oh, God. I hope I help. Like I said, if anything comes up and you need help or whatever, if you need somebody to help you out with an issue, give me a call. That's fine.
Oh, we will definitely keep your number handy. Do you have any, you know, if people want to get in touch with you, should they email you? Do you have a website? Any of that stuff?
I've got a website, Seven Hills Ghost Hunters and Paranormal Researchers.com, and they can pull it up.
Is there a contact form on there?
Yes.
Okay.
And my phone number's there, and phone number is my cell phone. So
awesome.
So people can get in touch with you if they have questions about maybe they're experiencing some sort of demonic presences, or, you know, even if their granny's floating around there.
They can call me anytime they feel there's a problem at their house. But it was nice meeting you.
It was nice to meet you too.
So good to meet you too. Have a good night. We'll definitely keep in touch.
You too. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye. Wow, Beth, wasn't that wonderful?
That was really amazing. And I'm so glad that Stephen was able to come and spend some time with us and give us, you know, I know here on Ghost Hunting in New England, we don't do demons, but I think that this was an interesting look at if you are experiencing some sort of demonic activity, you know, there are people out there who will help you.
Yes. Okay. So if you have a demon, don't call us.
Right.
Call Stephen or one of his friends.
Yes. Head over to Seven Hills Ghost Hunters and Paranormal Researchers.com.
Beth, so here's something interesting. This week is not only a great week because we got to record twice in one week, which we almost never do, but our episode came out last night. Mm-hmm. So between when we started recording this, we got some new reviews.
Excellent. All right.
Yes. And so again, everyone, if you are on Audible, please go give us a 5-star review. We've gotten 2 since last night when our episode dropped and we asked people. Woo-hoo. So we're going to ask them again. Only one person wrote something though. So 2 people left us 15 stars, 15 stars, 15 stars, but only one person left a review. This is called 15.5 stars left by an Amazon customer.
So they were that's a very long name. An Amazon customer.
Well, it's just Amazon customer.
So it's just Amazon customer.
Yes.
Imagine if you were really named that. Like, and you're like 40 years old.
Right? You were named, your first name was Amazon, and then all of a sudden Amazon like becomes the biggest thing in the world.
Right. And you know, maybe then you like, you know, get married and change your name to customer, right? So now you are Amazon customer. Can you imagine signing that on credit card slips?
No, thank you.
People would not believe that's really your name.
Well, don't you write Daffy Duck on all your credit card slips?
No, I just scribble. Oh. I make a couple of loops.
Okay. So what they had to say was, catch the latest season since the original co-host Beth has made a grand return. Also, for the first time ever, Amelia has picked 2 themes, Eastern European spooks, Striga, and vampires, as well as tales about scurvy pirates of yore and their misdeeds. I give this all the stars plus an extra 0.5-star just for fun. Well, thank you, Amazon customer. What a nice review.
Yes, Amazon customer. That was fabulous. Thank you for noticing that I did return and that Amelia has definitely got a couple of themes going on this year. We're going to have to do a whole episode just on Amelia's pirates.
A pirate episode? Sure, yeah. No problem.
And you're going to have to do it all in a pirate voice. Because I think that would make Amazon customer really happy.
Well, if she requests it, we'll be sure to do it.
Why do you assume?
Armies. It's not an assumption, but I could say he.
I assumed it was a he, so that's interesting that you said she.
So anyway, that was our big review.
Did you write that review?
No, I think you wrote that review.
I haven't written a review.
Do we have anything else, Beth?
I don't have anything else. I'm so glad that we got 2 reviews. Mm-hmm. Perhaps I'll do the contact information since you're getting a little wobbly over there.
Yeah, I've had just so much Benadryl. So
please send us your drive-by ghostings. You can email them to us at ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. We would love to have you tell the story in your voice, and we would love to just play your voice telling the story. Please keep it to under 3 minutes. If you are going to send us a typed version of your story, we're happy to take those too, and one of us will read it, hopefully as well as you could tell your story. You can find us on all of the social medias. We are on the Facebook, Ghost Hunting in New England. We are on the Instagram, Ghost Hunting in New England. We are on the Tweet at Ghost Hunting NE. What else are we on?
Our website at ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, which Beth has updated. If you subscribe to our website, you know Beth updated it.
It's true, because you got inundated last night with emails saying that I had updated.
Like 13 emails, but
yeah, 10
it,
new
it
posts.
Is what it is. It is what it is.
And so if you enjoy my wonderful sarcastic sense of humor here, maybe you'll also enjoy it in paragraph form on the website.
Ba-dum-bum.
So with that in mind, anything else, Amelia?
Thank you so much to Aaron Schilb. You can check out his for writing our music. Whoops. Why are we thanking him? Because he wrote our music. Our wonderful music.
I also want to point out, we paid him for writing that music.
We paid him $50 and it was well worth it.
Oh,
and
it was so worth it.
You can go pay Aaron to write your music too. And you can find him over at his podcast at
Nashville Tour Stop.
Nashville Tour Stop podcast.
If you like music podcasts.
Yeah. Or just
supporting the show and friends of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while we're on that, you can go up and see Tim Regan up in Salem. He's another good friend of our show. You can check out Long Island Investigators, the Buffalo edition with Will Fox. By all means, reach out to Jamie Day for a psychic reading.
You can go on Instagram and check out Art History Horrors. It's a new Instagram account that my friend Kat, and she's actually a professional curator. So it's cool. Like, it's a cool Instagram because you learn about art, but it's all like horrific art. It's pretty sweet. Yeah. So it's COVID time. So if you walk into a restaurant and you notice there's nowhere to sit and there's like huge signs on the door with stop signs, take a second and read the sign. It's going to save everyone a lot of headache when you walk in.
Reading. It's fundamental.
And as always,
happy hunting.